Okay?
I knew. Hey, I am Simon Lockridge. That's been pronounced several ways, but it's L-A-K-R-I-T-Z. And a little bit about my background, first of all. I was born in Michigan, raised in Tucson, lived in Tucson for about 19 years, went to school there, Tucson High School, and the University of Arizona in Tucson. I was drafted and served 2 years in the Army. I went overseas to Germany, spent about a year and a half over there in Germany. Actually, Heidelberg, which is a very beautiful town. Then came back in 55, got my master's degree, and I got my first job teaching at Hanford High School. I taught there for about 8 years, till about 1967, and then I became director of special projects, which has to do with the advanced type students, vocational students, adult education, and the like. All of the federal funds that the school district received, I was the manager or the director of those projects and saw to it that the applications were taken care of, filed, and the programs were evaluated. I have 4 sons. In fact, number one son went 2 years to COS and then ended up at UC Irvine. And number three son spent 1 year here and went to UC San Diego. My other two went to UC Davis. One of them's still there. He's in the veterinarian school. And the other one is at the University of Arizona currently. That in a nutshell is about my personal life. I suppose you ask the question, why would a guy like me run for Congress and get involved in this politics game? Because the pay isn't that great, even though I think the pay now is $72,000. It was $69,000. They had a pay rate the first of the year. And your filing fee is usually 1% of the salary, which is $72,000. So that's $700 is a lot of money to pay all at one time. But if you're in a campaign, that's a small amount of money to pay when you have to pay thousands upon thousands for TV time, radio time, newspaper ads, and so forth. But I suppose I've come from a family that probably is more in line for doing services, providing care, and being considerate of other people. And I picked that up at an early age, I guess, and took on various youth activities where in my hometown. And when I moved to Hanford, I kept it up in that area. I became a city councilman in 1974. It was my first term. My second term, I ran again, of course, from one. I was the vice mayor from 78 to 80, and became the mayor in 1980 to 82. And at town like Hanford, we rotate. We don't run for the mayorship. We have to rotate. The next person in line takes it. So I guess my devotion to people, to human services, I became more public-minded and thought that I could do a better job, or a good job, rather, as a public servant. So, city council was the first thing that I ran for, and possibly move on up. I did do one little stunt, though. In 1968, Kings County was reapportioned. I'm sure you all know about reapportionment and the recent controversy we're having right now. But in 66, Kings County was reapportioned into the Monterey area and Santa Clara. And we were the new kid on the block, but we waited until someone from there ran for the office of Congress, the incumbent, Bert Kalkut. don't know if you hear him or not, but he has since passed away. But he's a Republican, and the Democrats didn't have anybody running for office. And we didn't know that until 3 weeks before the general election. And to a good Democrat, that's heresy. You've got to have somebody run against the opposition out there. So we sat down at somebody's house one day, and we figured out, well, we've got to have somebody run for office. So who wants to be the guinea pig? Because you haven't got a chance, really. 3 weeks' time, your name is not on the ballot. They have to write your name in office. So we said, well, who's going to do that? They all pointed at me, and they said, okay, you're going to be it. So for 3 weeks, we had a three-week whirlwind campaign. I went from Monterey to Morro Bay to Santa Clara, all over the coastal area there, back to Kings County again. And I got about 4,000 votes. I think it was Smith, maybe, or Jones. It couldn't be easy to spell. But Lockridge is not a very nice name to write that, or it's hard to recall. So then, that was my first attempt at a national public office. Okay, and then I was a member of the Central Committee in Kings County for 6 years also, so I had some experience in that particular area, and I was their chairman for 4 years out of those 6. Okay, I think some of the issues that bother me or I'm of concern with, of course, is national scope. We do have some local issues that are important. Let me just mention a few, and if you like them, that's good. If you don't like them, well, it's all right. It is foreign affairs, and when I speak, by the way, as a candidate for Congress, it's almost difficult to leave out Reagan, or about the presidency, no matter if it's Reagan or John Doe, because he is of the opposite party, and my opponent in Congress is of the opposite party, and he actually supports his party chief. So it's difficult to separate the two. So when I say Reagan, I'm referring to Cheyenne. When I say Cheyenne, sometimes I'm talking about Reagan at times too. Cheyenne seems to be supporting Reagan's policy in Central America. He has voted for those bills that Reagan wants to get through Congress, which supports certain elements. For example, in El Salvador, this is the election is coming up, I believe, next month or thereabouts. And there's a bill before Congress now to provide more military aid to the El Salvadorians to help them protect themselves during the election, protect them against the so-called rebels that exist there. And it's also Reagan, or through the PIA, is supporting the rebels in Nicaragua, and what the administration is doing, they are supporting extreme right groups. We have a country that was founded upon a revolutionary type war. It was a war that separated us from England. It was based upon violence, but the doctrines that we were supposed to have committed ourselves to, that is life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, against tyranny, etc., we don't seem to be following that policy in Latin America. We are Latin American policy, or our policy in Latin America, all the way from Mexico on down to Chile and Argentina, has always been, in most cases, really all cases, have always been on the wrong side. In Chile, Argentina, we've always picked the wrong side there, and the opposing side usually wins the election or the coup d'etat or the revolution or whatever that goes on, and we seem to be picking the wrong side because we think it's best to go with the party in power, since it would be admitting to us that maybe the party in power here in this country isn't good either. Maybe. So I don't think the president's policy in Latin America or in Central America is a proper policy or method or approach to use, considering our own country's history. I also think that our foreign policy, whether it be in Latin America or the Far East or the Middle East or Africa, is based on fear. So if you base your policy on fear, you tend to react that way and try to defend yourself. I refer to the nuclear weapons race. It seems to be the thing to do that we are afraid of what the other country might do, so therefore we build bigger and better bombs, thinking that this would be the best means of protection. They wouldn't dare drop it on us because we got something better. Now, obviously, if you're a scientist or any person of any intelligence, the first nation that drops the bomb destroys the world. We're fortunate in the Second World War that not too many bombs were dropped. But in the next war, there won't be just one or two bombs dropped. There'll be an adequate number of atomic bombs, nuclear bombs dropped to destroy the opposing side, whether it be us to Russia or Russia to us. And both sides lose it. In fact, the whole world loses it. There was enough evidence to indicate that the bomb will wipe us out, not maybe immediately, but shortly. The wings go around the world and they take up all this crap, they drop the bomb, all of it. So I think we have enough conventional weapons to destroy whole nations. I am not saying, I do not support any policy that will make this country weaker or a weak nation. I think we need a strong country to prove to our opponent that we mean business. But nuclear bombs is ridiculous. We can't have a large army, we can't have a strong and powerful air force, navy, which will tell the Russians that, look, we mean business. You take one more step, and that's it. But getting ourselves ready to destroy the whole world doesn't make sense. I like my football games, and I wouldn't see them anymore if I was gone. Okay. So in 1981, Reagan pushed through Congress his tax reduction bill. Amounted to $750 billion over the three-year period, or better, between 1982 and 1985, there would be a $750 billion tax reduction in the country. In 1983, deficit was three times size of Carter's last budget year. Right, about the tax cuts, though. If you were in the $15,000 to $20,000 a year income bracket, you got a $1,200 reduction in your taxes over the 3-year period. as you recall, they were in base 10% a year. So over 3 years, if you were in that bracket, you got $1,200 back. If you were in the $200,000 bracket, you got $74,545 back. For the $20,000 income bracket, that equates to 7% reduction in the taxes. So the $200,000 a year bracket, that equates to 37%. I'm not trying to mock rich people. They deserve their money, and I don't want to take away from them. But if you're going to be fair and square to everybody, let's be fair and square to everybody, and give everybody the same tax reduction. 37% for one group and 7% for the other group doesn't equate to equality. There's another factor that 20, 30 years ago, big corporations paid 45% or plus of the income tax collected in the country. The average citizen paid about half also. So it's about half and half 20 years ago or so. Today, big corporations only pay 8% of the income taxes collected in this country. Where's my voice to go? Again, this country was built in part because of the large corporations that were great. I don't deny them their existence. But if they're expecting the average American to pay their share, then why can't these corporations? One-sixth of the population, or less than one-sixth of the population of this country, earns half of all the earned income in a given year. That's fine, but let them pay their share. Okay. About the same voting record, I have several items here may be of interest to you, I think. As you know, he has announced that he's running again for office, and he made a trip through Tri-Stadia and Fresno and Hanford on Friday to announce his candidacy and made several statements.
No, it's a one to 16 right now. Who would you do about King County Water?
Yeah.
What is the problem?
The problem is that huge lake of 8,000 acres that's still there, and dividing again, farm laborers are unemployed, and farmers can't farm their land. Get them out of there. Remember also that where the lake is now is not the natural lake bottom. It's 5 miles further west. Somebody pulled the levee with big bulldozers 5 miles further east where it is now. If the water had gone in the other area, it may have been a little bit easier to get rid of. Or we could have created a better system of pumping the water out as the water came in. If they knew it was going to be a wet year, I think we all realized last year that, and then let's pump the water out as it's going in there.
How many agri-corporations do this?
Well, you have your three big ones, Bonneville, Salyer, and Westwood, but there are many other small people too. Kings River farmers are hurting because, or were hurting because the soil was too wet and damp and tilled. You can get your tractors in there. So they were complaining about the pumping of the water all at one time. Okay? It's almost 12 o'clock. I want to thank you for allowing me to come in here and talk to you. One way that a politician gets to meet people is to do things like this.